Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversations. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is Eric Solbakken, CPA, author, speaker, business advisor, and creator of the Accountant Success Formula. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks, Liz. Looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yep. It's great to reconnect with you after a couple of years. So We have a lot to say. Let's jump in.
Okie dokie.
Now, accounting talent has been really scarce in the U.S. and around the world for years. And what are some ideas you have on how to make things better? And what have you seen firms do successfully?
Well, I think I'd like to take a little step back on that specific question. It has been difficult, but the pandemic and the recent events that's happened has made it's kind of thrown gas on a fire. There was like the smoldering fire of discontent amongst professionals and people going into the profession that just going, this just doesn't feel right. There's something wrong here. The pandemic has thrown gas on it. It basically put a big spotlight on it. And so now what we have is an increase, like it's exponentially gone off the rails in terms of difficulty. Like every single firm that I talk to, my coaching clients, everybody has problems finding talent. And it comes down to one reason. And this problem was not, it was here before. The problem was here before. It's just now it's been elevated. Now it's pronounced, which is basically that the traditional accounting firm business model is such an oppressive way to live and create and have a career that smart people are not going into the profession. I've talked to so many accountants. I did a video blog on this. It was last summer, I think it was. Yeah, it was last summer. And I talked to a friend of mine who is a partner in a firm, not in the Accountant Success Formula. And he was saying his kids, he goes, his son wanted to go into accounting and he begged him not to. He didn't want his son to go in accounting. So he was telling him not to go into the profession that he himself had gone into. And I thought, that's incredibly sad. That he wouldn't want his child to follow in his footsteps. Well, that's because we've gone through this meat grinder of a billable hour mindset that says the person who works the most hours wins. And so why would you want to work like crazy to finally go through a really tough exam to get your CPA, to finally get into an accounting firm, to work ridiculous hours so that you can then finally struggle your way to the top to become a partner so you can have even more stress and work even more hours? It's insane. So for me, there's a simple solution. You got to fix the model. You can fluff it up and say, oh, we provide a work-life balance here and we give back the benefits here and there. And like, if you go to every website, it's all the same. Every posting's the same. We really pride ourselves on having a work-life balance. We give you great benefits and lots of opportunity for upward mobility so you can have more stress in your life. Oh no, sorry. They didn't put that part in there, but you know what I mean? So you got to fix the model and you got to make it so that people aren't having to work crazy hours to make the benefits that they want in their life. And for most accountants, I always call it, there's these three freedoms we want. And we want money, clients, and time. We want to make a certain amount of money. We want to work with great clients who appreciate our services. And we want free time away from accounting. We want free time to do things outside. Call it the life side of the balance, right? So there's work and life. So for me, the way firms fix this is by fixing their model, getting away from this billable hour mindset and cranking out tax returns to positioning yourself as a client's trusted advisor and value pricing it so that you're making the money, you have clients appreciate you, and then you get free time away from the accounting firm.
Well, that's perfect. And you know, what about attracting new people? You know, the business model is broken, but how can we get new people into accounting?
Well, you see, this is where, and again, when I work with accounting firms, and that's what I do in the executive level coaching program, I show accounting firms how to transition their firm from the traditional model to this accountant success formula model that I've coined it, the accountant success formula. And when you do that, you start telling the market and showing the people that here's the model that we ascribe to. We don't believe that the value that we bring to the table is based on how many hours we work. We believe that the value is driven on the transformation you receive. And it's about giving the client that we're working for that incredible transformation to improve their lives. Once you start putting that messaging out, you're telling potentials that are coming into the profession that, hey, you don't have to work crazy hours. You get to have incredible impact on people's lives. It's not just about paying, you know, banging out tax returns and making sure, you know, your 1040 is filled out correctly or your this form is filled out correctly. It's about the impact you're going to have on your clients' lives. So, and I found this is already, it's like when I speak to accountants or potential accountants that are looking to go into the profession, I tell them about the traditional model and how it's flawed. And they're like, and I said, is that what you really want? They're like, no. Then I express and I tell them about the new model, the updated model, and they get super excited. But I'm like, no, you need to get compensated for the value you bring to the table. And you're looking at transforming people's lives, not just cranking out their tax returns. They all of a sudden get excited and they want to be part of it. And so we've had like basically one of my coaching clients, we've had, I've been helping them with the interview process. And literally every person they interview is excited and wants to work for them. So it's not like they're having to say, please, please work for us. They were like begging us to hire them. So it works.
Yeah. So make the environment better, change the business model, and
yes,
you get money, good clients, time.
Yes.
That sounds perfect.
It's a triple win, Liz. Like there's a three, like when I look at any problem, and that's for me, I think of myself as an intellectual capital company. I create ideas and concepts, and then I bring that to the market. And then you can use that to leverage and create the life that you want for yourself. And so I think about this quite a bit. Every time I look at a problem, I always want to see three wins. There has to be a three-way win. If there's a win-lose, it's not a right solution. And so in this solution, when we change the business model from cranking out tax returns and billable hours to value pricing and quarterbacking for the client, three people win. The accounting firm owner wins because they're not working like crazy hours and they get their three freedoms. The staff or the people coming into the profession are happier and they're not having to, you know, tie themselves to this billable hour model and punching in a time clock. So they win and the client wins. So it's the owner, the staff, and the clients, they all win because the model, it works for everyone. So there is a way to have a triple win.
That sounds fantastic. So what are some of the other benefits of this new model for the people that you work with?
Well, the number one benefit that comes from all of it is a feeling of empowerment. There's really, my book that I wrote, The Accountant Success Formula, which you and I have talked about many, many times, right? Mm-hmm. And the caption here, if you can read it there, it's freeing today's accountant from an oppressive business model. Okay. And I truly believe it's an oppressive business model. Not only does it keeps everybody pushed down and so they can't attain their three freedoms, but it has a real mental, negative mental impact on our well-being. And so what happens is that we fall into a victim state. And so most people, everyone lives in three states. You're either in a victim state or you're anger or you're empowered. So if you think of it as a sliding scale, there's victim, anger, empowered. So what happens is as accountants, think about it, you got to go in, you got to crank, and you know this. I mean, you know the hours you used to put in, right? We've had many conversations about this. Mm-hmm. You know, you're cranking out and you're feeling like a victim. Oh, I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to work these hours. And you feel like a victim. Well, how do you get out of that state? That's a low energy vibration, right? Low vibrational energy. Well, your body gets, every once in a while you get angry and you get pissed off at the client. You're like, oh, I don't want to do this or screw my boss or whatever. Well, there's a little jolt of energy and anger is actually a good emotion to have. It brings you to a new level, a higher vibration. Now it's still not a good vibration to be at. It's anger. But every time you get angry, it's because you feel like a victim. feels like you're out of control. So, but what happens is there's this thing called a victim anger loop that most people get caught in. They're a victim, then they get angry, and then they subside. They can't stay in anger too long, so then they drop back down to victim. Then they get angry again. And so there's this victim anger loop that happens. And so I found that when I was in public practice, I did that for 18 years, victim anger over and over. Tax season, pissed off by by the end of tax season, I was ready to quit and put on my strap on my guitar, go down south and, you know, play in the clubs in LA, which is, I actually had that as an opportunity. I could have played in my heavy metal band and gone down there. And at the end of every tax season, I'm like, I'm out of here. Right. So there's this loop that happens, but there's a third level that would be much better to live in. And that's up here. That's empowered. And in an empowered state, you don't feel like a victim. You don't get angry, but you're also not arrogant and boastful. You are empowered. You're simply empowered to work with the people you want to work. You know the value that you bring to the table. If someone says no, it's okay. No problem. If they want you to do something you don't want to do, you're saying, no, that's not me. It's over here. And so the biggest benefit that comes from shifting the model is this feeling of empowerment, where all of a sudden you get your life back because you realize that you are actually in control. You get to choose every single day who you work with. You get to choose every single day what you want to do. And that the problem is, and that's why I call it an oppressive model. The traditional model is so oppressive. It's like, as soon as you get a client, you feel beholden to them. Like you have to do everything they need you to do. Because the only way you're going to make money from them is by working another hour. So therefore, if they want you to go get their dry cleaning, you'll go do it. I mean, I jokingly say that, but there's this, and there's also this strange thing that happens with accountants. And the reason why I understand this so much is because I was in public practice for 26 years myself. I lived the nightmare for the first 18 years. And then the next 8 years, I shifted my model over and I experienced this freedom. But you feel like you're beholden to the client for the rest of your life. Like, what an incredible feeling. Like, as soon as someone says, oh, someone said, yes, they want to work with me, I'm so happy. Now I have to take care of them for the rest of my days and for the rest of my life. No. So this empowerment is like, you know, if the client's not a fit for me anymore, I let them go. I offload them. There's an offloading way. There's a way to offload people from your client list that feels so empowering, because once you offload those bad apples, offload those non-ideal clients or that low paying clients or the price sensitive clients, you get like this incredible feeling of empowerment. It's like, wow, this feels great. And, you know, there is a way, and my father taught me this a long time ago. And there's a clause in the book, that I share this story about my dad teaching me this example. There's a way to tell someone to go to hell where they look forward to the trip. So there's a way to offload somebody from your firm without them getting angry or upset with you or having it negatively impact your practice. You offload them in a way where they're happy to leave and you can get paid when they leave. And again, that's in the accountant success formula. So we have an offloading model that makes the client happy to go and someone else takes care of them and you make money to not do the work.
That's a win-win, yeah.
Triple win. Triple win. The other accountant wins that does the work and the client wins because they keep getting their work done. But the best part is I don't do it. Somebody else does it.
Yeah. You know, I never experienced that in any of the firms that I worked in, but I did experience the joy of when one of our really horrible clients fired us. And generally they fired us for what I thought was the wrong reason.
Yeah.
But that was okay. You know, I remember meeting with a successor client for one of them. And I had no idea who these people were. They came in the office and wanted to meet with me. And they said, oh, well, where are the new clients for ABC Company? The first words out of my mouth were, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And they just kind of looked at each other. This was a manager and a supervisor. And they just looked at each other and thought, what on earth did we just get ourselves into? And I'm like, good luck.
And so there's that victim mentality versus an empowered mentality. So you can proactively off, and you should, and I show accountants how to do this all the time, actively manage your inventory. We tell our clients to do it all the time. You know, bad inventory, you shouldn't keep it on the books. So we're always about writing off inventory or doing inventory. That's why the inventory count, you know, your lovely audit that we talked about earlier, you know, you got to make sure you write off that obsolete inventory that's bad. You write it off. Well, let's do that with our client list. And there's nothing more empowering than saying goodbye to someone who treats you horribly. Cause then you start to realize that you were actually complicit in the relationship, right? We're complicit in the negative, in whatever negativity was happening to you, you're complicit in it because you stayed there.
Right? Yeah.
And so again, coming back to the first question you had about how do we bring quality people into the profession? You show these quality people that are coming, we'll call it the people that are the team members or the staff that are coming to work in the accounting firm. They don't get necessarily the choice to offload the clients. It's the partner that has to. So the partner has to be the lead. They have to be the leader that shows them, hey, when someone treats us wrong, we offload them. You don't have to have that. And so one thing that I used to do in my practice, which I get strange looks from everybody, once a year, I would hand out the inventory list. Like there was an official offloading day. Everybody got the inventory list and everybody got to go through and cross off the clients they didn't like working with. Then everybody came into the boardroom and I sat down and I said, okay, did we get it all in? And everybody got their letters. And I just grabbed it and I said, and I handed it over. I didn't even look at it. Handed it over to my assistant. I said, okay, send firing letters to every single client that someone marked down. And everybody in the room went, and I went, if they're not nice and you don't like working with them, they're not nice, then it's fine. I didn't even look. I didn't even look to see who the clients were. And the staff were so empowered because they were like, oh my gosh, Eric really does care. And I'm like, yes, I do. And so what happened was, yes, I offloaded a chunk of clients, but staff morale went through the roof. And because we did that, our energy vibration went up. And this is the thing I also talk about is that nature abhors a vacuum. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nature abhors a vacuum. As soon as you create space, something else rushes in to fill it. Well, we created the space and we had it set and clear in our minds who the client we wanted to have on board, which, you know, they had the means, the needs and the fit. And boom, we got literally the next week, boom, we got ideal client one, boom, ideal client two, boom, ideal client three. Right. And they came in the door. And again, when you work the model properly, like actively empowered, intentionally do it, we offload like say 20 clients and onboarded 3 clients. And those 3 clients had the same revenue model as the 20 clients we offloaded.
Wow.
So you're offloading 20 clients at X dollars and you onboard 3 clients at X dollars. Do the math. You're making the same amount of money working less.
Yeah. Or maybe providing more in-depth services, which is also a lot more fun.
Well, the modeling, if you're doing something you don't like, it's going to come through. And just cranking out tax returns and treating clients like a transaction you might as well have automation do it. And automation is taking over. And that's why we're also seeing a crushing of a pricing model, because more and more we've got offshoring, we've got technology. It's just crushing the costing model. So as it crushes the costing model, the pricing model has to adjust as well. And I cover that off in my book and all my programs, is showing how that interaction plays, that if you're just focused on reducing and increasing your efficiencies in your accounting practice, you are playing a losing game, because you're just pushing your costing down. Well, I can do it faster, but now what you're doing is you're pushing the price down because you haven't adjusted yourself in the model to actually be helping the client make the transformation that they really want.
Yeah, that's really the key, I think.
There's the two keys, right? It's the billable hour, and then it's compliance versus reliance. So it's like the billable hour versus value pricing and compliance filings versus reliance. And those are the two keys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's much more exciting to come into work when you know that you're going to be helping a small business with challenges rather than just oh, well, let me get the trial balance into the tax software and get all the numbers adjusted and the work papers lined up, and then do the next one and do the next one and do the next one.
Right.
Yeah.
And I add something to that. It's exciting to go into work when you know you're going to have a positive impact on someone's life, mm-hmm. and you're going to get paid incredibly well to do it. That's the big missing piece, like for accountants. And I had to get my head out of that, because for accountants, we have, I call it cognitive dissonance. You know, the concept of cognitive dissonance is trying to hold two opposing thoughts in your mind at the same time. It's very, mm-hmm. it's impossible. You can't say, mm-hmm. you can't think I am good, I am bad at the same time, because it doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
So with accountants, we've been forced to say, well, what's the value we bring to the table? Oh, save the client's money, save them money, save them taxes, save them taxes, save them taxes, save them taxes. And then on the other side, you're going, I want to charge more, charge more, charge more, because I want to get paid more per client. Because if I get paid more per client, I can work with less clients, which gives me that life balance right. that we talked about, right? So now I've got cognitive dissonance. I'm thinking I got to save the money. And on the other side, I'm trying to charge more. That's why accountants have a hard time charging higher right. prices, is because of cognitive dissonance. But it's not mm-hmm. about saving tax money. If you're constantly focused on saving tax money, you're going to have cognitive dissonance. It's about mm-hmm. it's about building the lifestyle that the client wants for themselves. It's delivering them the transformation. Once you start thinking about it that way, part of it could be in tax minimization, which is all great. I mean, I love paying as little income tax as possible. But if I have to pay double the income tax because I've doubled the value of my business and I'm making $1 million instead of $500,000, I'm more than happy to pay the extra tax, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I find that most accounts have a really, I did personally, I had a really hard time with it, was how can I charge more? And that's the mindset we have to break it out. It's about having the right client conversation. And in the accountant success formula, I talk about that. You know, there's this, the accountant success formula has a methodology to it, and it's positioning, inventory, client conversations, professional service agreements, and referral network. And it's like a cycle that goes through of it. And one of those areas is client conversations, which is how to have the right conversation with the client so that they see the value, that you work on the value, they see the transformation, then you set your price with them. And if you're getting paid really, really well, it makes going to work so much easier.
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. Yeah. And I really like how you emphasize the transformation for the client. And it's not just a transaction.
Yes.
Because that is satisfying a higher level of need. Mm-hmm. And that is always more valuable.
It's not a commodity.
Right.
It's not a commodity.
It can't be.
No, because it's personal to you. So it can't be a commodity.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
How do you get away from the commoditization trap? Simple. Deliver to the client the transformation that they want for themselves.
Exactly.
It's a simple. But we have, but the problem is our professional bodies, our institutes has been training us away from that. They train mm-hmm. us away from the transformation to focusing on the nitty gritty details. They mm-hmm. also don't let us capture value pricing. They focus on billable hours. Like there's reports that you cannot get from the institute on, like they do these widespread reports. And you can only get a copy of that report if you contribute to the report. But the report is all about a billable hour model. So what's your billable mm-hmm. hours? How many billable hours do you charge and all the rest of it? And I'm like, I could never get those reports because I didn't have billable hours. I didn't have timesheets in my firm. Mm-hmm. And so they're skewed towards billable hours and just transacting like this instead of value pricing and transformation.
Yeah. Well, I definitely am a fan of value pricing, and I try to do that in my writing business as well. So
yes.
Yeah. Now, what about growing a firm? What are some strategies for growth? You know, I mean, you can get more clients, you can provide more services, you can provide higher value services. What would you recommend to a client, to somebody who's working with you?
Well, so here's where Eric zags when everybody else is zigging, okay? there's lots of gurus out there, lots of coaches for accounting firms, and they keep saying, this is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. See, I don't take that approach. I take the approach the other way around. With the same way I show my accounting firm clients how to work with their clients is, let's go back to what you're trying to accomplish. What is the life that you're trying to build for yourself? So when I work with accounting firm owners, the first thing we do is we go back to basics and say, well, what is the life you're trying to build for yourself? How much money do you mm-hmm. want to make? What are the mm-hmm. ideal clients that, what's the work you really love to do and that you're passionate about? And that if you did every day, you wouldn't feel like you're working. And number three, how many free days do you want? How much free mm-hmm. time do you want? Okay. From there, you then reverse engineer the model, the business model, to figure out exactly the firm that you want to build for yourself. So if I go out and I give you an example and I say, well, the way to grow a firm is to do X, Y, Z. Well, that might work for Jane, but it won't work for Joe because Jane is building a different kind of firm than Joe is.
Right.
So to come out and say, this is how you grow and scale a firm to everyone is you can't do that to your clients. You can't tell your clients exactly how to, every client is individual. They have a certain transformation they want and they have certain situations. So you have to customize it to their needs. But the first thing you need to do is figure out what the end goal is. So for example, I can have one client, it's like an accounting firm, and say, well, how much money do you want to make? And the accountant might say, I want to make $500,000 a year. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Who are the type of clients you want to work with? Well, I want to work with just really small startup businesses that need help with X, Y, and Z. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. therefore they've got a certain price threshold on that. So therefore we have to build the model out backwards to say, this is how many clients you need at this price point to give you this much revenue model. And then if you have this many clients at this price point, you're going to need this much expense model to give you the mm-hmm. net income you want, which is the 500. And so now we reverse engineer it and say, now how do we attract those, you know, 300 clients that you need at that number? Another option, which I call the Dream 100, for an example, let's say an accounting firm, I say, okay, you have 100 corporate clients. That's it. You take 100 corps, mm-hmm. $1,000 a month, gives you a $1.2 million revenue model. Mm-hmm. And then you provide them, and we figure out the services you're going to provide them. There's your revenue model. Then the expense model is, I'll need this people to deliver the service. There's the expense. And then here's the net income that kicks out. And inadvertently, it kicks out like in that model, you could have 100 corporate clients, call it the Dream 100, $1.2 million billing. You could probably have a revenue model, expense model of, say, $400,000. You're making $800,000 a year for 100 corporate clients. So it's a different model, right? And so mm-hmm. how do you grow and scale to 100 firms is going to be different than someone who's going after 300 small right. corporate clients, right? So you can't, there's not, for me to say, oh, there's this just the one way to do it would be missing the mark.
I love how you reverse engineer it by helping people figure out where they want to get to. Yes. Yes. Because that's exactly what you're teaching these accountants to do for their clients. Yes. Where do you want to go with your business? And right. let's help you get there.
Yeah. And so there's a really key point here. With the account success formula, I not only show them it's about the four planning pillars. So it's like a life. So I picture like someone's life as a house. And there's a roof mm-hmm. and that's the life that your clients are trying to build for themselves or the accounting firms that I'm working with. But let's just talk about clients for accounting firms because that's who our audience is right now. So let's just talk about their clients. There's a house and there's four pillars that hold up that house. So you can picture that four pillars that hold up the roof of the house. And those four pillars are the business, the wealth, the retirement, and the estate. Those four pillars hold up the roof of the house. Well, what kind of house are they trying to build? So if we were building a house, like a construction company, and I went to a client and we had a conversation, they said, well, we'd like a house with two bedrooms, one bathroom, and a two-car garage. Perfect. And here's how it's going to dial in. So then what we do is we go out, we get a roofer, we get a plumber, we get an electrician. They come to the general contractor, me, and I have the general, and I have the blueprints here on the plan and say, here's how we're going to build the house. And then they all come in with their specialties and they put in their pieces to make sure everything's in alignment. So the house is built properly, but that's not how houses are normally built for business owners. They have an accountant over here, a lawyer over here, a wealth advisor over here. Maybe they got a business coach over here. Maybe they got an insurance provider over there. And none of them are talking to one another or working from a set of blueprints to build the house. So can you imagine what a house would look like if you had a plumber, a drywaller, an electrician just building it the way they think it should be built based on their one conversation with the client? It gets built like a mess. So instead, you have a conversation, you sit with the client and you figure out what are those four pillars. And inadvertently, clients don't even know that these are things they should be looking at. So just having the conversation with them and just trying to figure out what the plan is incredibly valuable. It's super eye-opening. And they go, oh my God, I've never had an accountant talk to me about this stuff before. And I went, well, I'm not sure how you could possibly do the taxes without even knowing these things. I think accountants can't even do the, how could you do proper tax planning without knowing what we're trying to actually accomplish? And so then you work into these areas and then you find inadvertently, okay, there's something wrong with the will. The will is out of alignment with how we're building the business and where they want to leave it to their kids. Well, there's a special project. Let's do a special project and fix that. Let's do another project to figure out what the business plan is going to be. And the best part is, as the accountant, you don't have to be the specialist.
Right.
This is about collaboration with your other professional advisors. So when I had my public practice, I had lawyers and financial advisors and bankers, and they love to work with me because I worked with them, never against them. And so I always came to the table and said, let's have a conversation about the Joneses file. And they were like, most accountants don't spend this much time with them. And I said, I know, because most accountants are on a billable hour model and the clients would never want to pay that dollar per hour for me to do it. But I had built a model similar to the Dream 100 where I was more than happy to spend that time on that one client because I was getting paid incredibly well. And ultimately, it wasn't about the one client paying me really well. It's the overall business model. Like if I'm making $800,000 a year and I'm working part-time and a client needs me to do some extra digging into one area, okay.
Fine. Sure.
And it's fun.
I can do that.
And I might find a special change order or a project I can do. So it's really all about what's specific to them. And again, to come back to the accountants, what are we trying to build? What's the life you want? And so once you figure that out, then we reverse engineer and empower you. Remember, not a victim, not angry, but empowered to go forward and make it happen. And that's basically the accountant success formula in a nutshell.
Well, I love that model where you put all those things together. You know, I've written pieces for writing, for the writing community that incorporate all of that, because that's something that every small business owner really needs to think about as they build a business.
Yes.
And, you know, and there are so many times when the work of the attorney and the work of the accounting firm and the goals of the client were all at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who's been in public practice long enough knows that they'll have a meeting with a client and then the client will tell them in passing because they don't talk to them about it. And again, in my firm, there's a methodology. We talk about those four planning pillars every meeting. They'd go, oh yeah, I got my wills redone. And you go, oh, can I take a look at it? And then they'd send you a copy of it. And inadvertently you'd go, yeah, it's wrong. We need to fix it. And then you have to have that uncomfortable conversation with the client to tell them, nah, we got to fix this. And then the second uncomfortable conversation is going back to the lawyer and saying, I need to fix this. So the lawyer looks bad. You've made the lawyer look bad. The client's not happy. Then you have to figure out some way of billing for your time to fix it. I mean, I'll pass.
Yeah. I remember one client whose attorney decided to set up this really crazy new business structure that we didn't really quite understand, and the client certainly didn't understand, but it meant really, we had to go to the Secretary of State and redo all of the ownership and everything. It was just this incredibly complicated stuff we had to do. And I'm really not sure what the point of any of it was, except to get the lawyer some extra fees, because I really didn't get why they were doing this. But it just meant more hassle for the client and more stuff that we had to do, and we didn't really quite understand why.
Well, that fantastic book by Simon Sinek, Start With Why. I love that book. Love that book. Start With Why. Everything is a why. Start with why and then move from there. So again, how does the accountant want to build their, how do they grow their practice? Let's talk about what you're trying to build first. Then we'll reverse engineer it.
That's right. Now, we've talked a little bit about the changing business model. And as we move out of pure compliance, that'll mean that accountants will need to learn how to do different things. So what are some of the skills that you think accountants should learn or should strengthen to be successful?
Well, so here is the best part. This is the hallelujah moment. I want everybody who's on this call, that's listening to this podcast, watching this podcast, to hear me clearly, okay? You don't have to learn a whole bunch of new skills. You already have the skills necessary to do what I'm talking about. It's just, you have to work in a business model that allows you to bring that thinking to the forefront. So literally, the Accountant Success Formula program that I have is not some big, it's not like getting another MBA or getting a CFO designate or getting a special, you know, bunch more letters behind your name. When you are a CPA, you have been trained by your professional institute to be a professional. You've been trained to look at all these areas. But what happens is then when you get back into the accounting world and you start working in the practice, the model is oppressive and it forces you just to do this. But once you open your eyes and you go, wait a second, the model is holding me back from actually delivering the value that I already have innately inside me. And that's the wonderful thing that happens when I'm working with accounting firms, is that they think it's initially, they're like, okay, well, it's going to be a lot of work. And I'm like, no, it isn't. It's very freeing. So what I do is I consider myself like, you know, the Donald Miller story brand. I love that. The whole thing for me is like a story brand conversation. The hero is the accountant that I'm working with. Mm-hmm. They're the hero of the story, but they've been held back. And they've been held back by the evil tyrant known as the traditional accounting firm model. So that's the villain. The villain is holding down the accountant, right? And then Eric comes walking up and, do or do not. There is no try. I am Yoda. Okay. I am merely the guide that shows them there is a path to freedom. There is a path to freedom. That's why I call the accountant success formula a path to freedom. And I simply show them what's already inside them. It's already inside you. It's already there. You just need to be freed from it. And so we fight away the evil tyrannical model. Get rid of that. And all of a sudden now what's already inside you and the ability for you to use your talents and your skills, which you were trained for, can flourish. And so once I show them that, some simple mindset, it's all about mindset. You and I talked about this in the beginning too, when we were just catching up. It's all about mindset. It's about empowered. Mm-hmm. It's being empowered. It's in the mindset, right? And so once they get their mindset right and they start seeing how to apply it, right, and then they start doing it, they just take off. Yeah. So.
Well, you make it sound so easy.
It is. It's simple, but not easy. And the reason why it's not easy, it's because it's between our ears. It's all the way we've been thought. And when you think about it, we've been conditioned by the model, by the accounting firm, the traditional model, conditioned over billable hour, you have to work hard. It's like there's these three lies that the profession has brainwashed us into believing. Okay. The three lies. One, that your worth is equal to how many hours you work. Mm-hmm. Two, that your clients are naturally price sensitive to your services. Mm-hmm. And three, that tax time just has to suck. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are three lies, but they've been ingrained in us, conditioned in us. And I've got a degree in behavioral psychology as well. So there, it's been reinforced over and over again. And to try and untrain the mind to stop reacting the same way it's always done, it just takes time and repetitive. It just needs a guide. And that's why I think of myself as a guide. I show them and I just reiterate. And that's why I found that the coaching model is the best model that works. I've got an online course and a program that works, but the client, they don't get the results. When you get results is when you work and you have someone that keeps you accountable. And every day you just keep fixing your mindset and then it builds upon itself. And that's what frees you. So it's the mindset that needs to be shifted. But when I explain it, it sounds super simple, but it's not easy, but it's not easy because of the mental hurdle you have to go through. But there's not, there's not some big encyclopedia book that you need to go through. You just need to unlearn what you have learned, according to you.
Well, speaking of unlearning and changing what you're doing, what do you think accountants should stop doing immediately?
Stop billing by the hour. Stop billing by the hour. Stop billing by the hour, number one. Number two, stop thinking that you're going to become successful by doing more. Okay. Stop thinking that you're going to become successful by doing more. Right. And number three, start saying no. Mm-hmm. And if, by the way, if for any listeners, any readers, and they're, and I talk to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of accountants, they're not ready to change. They don't want to change. Yeah. I get that. I understand that because we're creatures of habit. Like the funniest joke is like, why did the accountant cross the road? Because they did it last year.
Yep.
Okay. We're just creatures of habit. We just follow and do the same. Some accountants aren't ready to do that. Okay. They're not ready to change to the billable hour, to do a value pricing, to get away from just cranking out tax returns. They don't. And I say, they're not ready for their freedom yet. That's fine. If there's one thing that they could do, learn to say no. Mm-hmm. Number one thing, just learn to say no. So in other words, when another client comes in the door, and you're already working your brains out, your crazy hours, and another client comes in and wants you to do the work, it's okay to say no. But mm-hmm. don't say no angrily, because if you say it angrily, it's because you're feeling like a victim.
Right.
Say no from an empowered state, which is, no, I'm sorry, I can't do your work. I've got maximum, I'm full. But not being mm-hmm. angry about it, just, nope, I can't do it, right?
Right.
And if you're super busy and you've got tons of work, then you need to increase your prices. Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how do you increase your prices without changing what you deliver your clients? And so that's why this shifting the pricing model and getting it from a lower price to a higher price means you have to show a shift in value to the client.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. if you shift in, how do you shift in? If you're staying your billable hour, you're cranking out tax returns, you're doing the same thing, you go and charge the clients double, they're going to be upset with you because you're not giving them any more value. If you simply shift over to the what I call the PSA, the professional services agreement, you give them more value. There's four benefits to it. Like if you give them a value pricing subscription model, they know the price ahead of time, it smooths out mm-hmm. their cash flow, they get unlimited access to you. And they could cancel at any time. That's extra value. So simply by shifting the billing model, you can increase your pricing.
Yeah.
Simply by shifting your positioning with the client, you can increase your pricing. And and instead of being the compliance-driven person, being the reliance one, we talked about this already, like you doing mm-hmm. the transformation, helping them, that also can increase pricing. And the third thing that can increase pricing is changing the conversation, the client conversation. So the way you talk to the clients, the way you have the conversation with them, they will perceive the value higher than if you do it under the traditional model. So if you want higher prices, change your positioning, change your client conversation, change your billing model.
Simple. So it sounds simple,
yes.
But, and we've already talked about the problems with mindset. What are some other things that keep accountants from making these changes that, that seem so simple and so logical?
Well, you know, originally, Liz, when I was in public practice, I didn't even know that a different way existed. Okay. So that was a real problem before. Like, and so we're talking 20 years ago plus. Like, it was a difficult thing to find, right? And for me, I'm on year 34 now. I started 34 years ago in public practice and working with accounting firms. And so I didn't even know there was a different way. So at least today with, you know, social media and more content and available, you know, quick typing on the keyboard, almost every accounting firm has heard of value pricing now. Back in the day when I read the book from Ron Baker and Paul Dunn, Firm of the Future, no one had really heard about it, like, or very few. So, I mean, there's a massive movement here. There's a great shift for them to know. So now you know, okay? The thing is, it's one thing to hear about value pricing and then just poo-poo it and just go, oh, forget it. What's holding them away?
Right.
The reason why they don't look at it is because they don't think it's ethical. Accountants don't think value pricing is ethical. Okay. On the contrary, billing by the hour is not ethical.
Right.
If you bill by the hour, you're actually in a conflict of interest with your clients because they want to know the price, and you're trying to maximize your income and they're trying to minimize the price to the value that they're going to receive. So when you go by a billable hour, you're instantly in a conflict of interest.
Right.
But accountants seem to don't think that. They don't think that. They're, no, that's the only ethical way to bill is by the hour. It's because they've been trained to believe it. We've just been trained to believe it. So the thing is, for me, I just simply bring the message out to the accountants and say, there's the beginning part of the book here. Have you ever asked yourself, does it always have to be this way? Right? Have you ever asked yourself? No, if you haven't, I'm going to make sure that you have. And then you can ask yourself that. And so now you know, once you know, you can't unknow. So the thing is, there is a way to do this that's going to free you. But again, the hindrance that was holding most accountants back is because they didn't even know. So for me, that's why I wrote the copy of the book. And so the book, you know, you can get it free on my website. It's like $9 shipping. It's a free plus shipping offer. I just give that book out like chiclets, like here, read it. Cause once you know, you can't unknow, then you can decide whether or not you want to move over and try and shift the model over. And as we've talked about it, it's very logical. It makes a lot of sense. So then why aren't more accountants moving towards it? Big, big four letter word, fear, right? That's why. They're afraid because they're afraid of losing market share. They're afraid of all the hard work that they put into building their business and getting their designation. They're afraid of something new, right? We became accountants for a reason. We're not entrepreneurs at heart. We're accountants, right?
Right.
I've realized now that I'm an entrepreneur stuck in an accountant's body because now I'm more of an entrepreneur, right? Because I'm trying to bring the message to the accountants. But I'm still an accountant at heart. So I understand that fear. It's afraid of changing something. We've always done it this way, right? We've been conditioned by the Institute. Think about it. How do you present your financial statements? Well, you better do it the same way you did last year because you got comparatives, right? So it's always about making sure it's the same as last year. So we're naturally, you asked what other than mindset is holding us back. It's all mindset. It's all mindset, right? Conditioned mindset. That's not, that's afraid of change. And that's all it is. And fear, the acronym for fear, which I love, is false evidence appearing real. It doesn't exist, right? But it's real to the person feeling it. Don't get me wrong. Like, if you're feeling the fear of changing the model, I totally get it. I've done that. I was there. But the difference for me was back then I did it on my own. I had to do it myself. I jokingly say, I wish I had met me back then. I wish I'd had someone like me to help me back then, but I didn't. So that's why I've shifted over. And that's why I'm coaching accounting firms on shifting the model. So I can be that guide to lead them through the fear and show them that it's just false evidence appearing real. Here's a bunch of accounting firms that have already done it. And then they come into my world, they get become part of the mastermind groups that are involved with firms that have done the same thing. So it's all mindset, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, mindset and just force of habit. You know, we love Sally, same as last year. That's our favorite way to approach our jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was still in public practice and reading Accounting Today and Accounting Web seemed like subversive activities, never mind CPA trend lines or anything like that. You know, it just seemed kind of subversive.
So here's the interesting thing. The way I look at life is that the more I can understand this guy, the more I can understand Eric and what makes Eric tick and why I think the way I think, the more successful I can be in the world, because I'm going to understand how to operate this machine known as Eric. So if we think about ourselves in that perspective, we go, why do I keep thinking this way? Why am I afraid to make a mistake? Because that's what it's about, right? Think about it. We're afraid to make a mistake. We're afraid to try something new and make a mistake. 1 + 1 = 2. We know we're going to get an A on that one. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs go, I wonder if I could make it come out to something different. Accountants don't think that way. But think of, if you look at it, it's because we've been conditioned to think that way. You did your exams and you would get a plus or you would get a passing grade or a failing grade. You either did it right or you did it wrong. It's black and white. Then you articled in the accounting firm and you started doing files and gave it to the partner or the reviewer, and the reviewer would give it back and show you all the things you did wrong. Constantly focusing on all the things you've done wrong, not focusing on all the stuff you did right, but really focusing on the things we've done wrong, because nothing accountants love more than finding a mistake another accountant make, right? Like, I mean, it's perverse.
Yeah.
You get a set of statements from another accounting firm because you got a new client. You're like, oh, look, they did this wrong. You know, you get this little adrenaline rush. Well, we've been conditioned to constantly be punished for the mistakes we make, okay? Which is anti-entrepreneurial. Entrepreneurs shift their mindset into going, hey, I just made another mistake. Great, I'm getting closer to the right answer, right? Like, was it 10,000 tries to get the light bulb to work? Edison, right? 10,000 failures, great. Every failure is one step closer to the right answer, but that's not how way accountants are built. We've been built to, you make that first mistake, whack, you get hit, racked on the knuckles, and no wonder you're going to stop. No wonder you're going to be afraid to try something new. It's because we've been conditioned to be punished for doing something wrong.
That's right.
And so now I understand how the mindset works. And I'm like, okay, now I'm conditioned to, I'm going to go try and do something. You know, one of the conversations I have around the dinner table with my daughter is, okay, what is one example of you tried something and failed today? What did you fail at today? Did we do something today and fail at it? And we talk about, I tried to do this and it didn't work. Perfect. What'd you learn from it? I learned that I got to do it this way. Fantastic. Because if you're not failing, you're not growing. But that's not what we get taught in accounting school. We get taught that we are the trusted advisor and we have to make sure the numbers are right. And you can't associate yourself with anything false or misleading. And if it's wrong, we're going to give you a rap on the knuckles and you've got to get that file done quicker and faster and better and more perfect. We create our own problems. We create our own problems in the profession. But having known that and understand that and see it, we don't have to live that way anymore. So once you know, you can never unknow. So from now you go, there is an opportunity for you to create a better life for yourself. Shift away from the traditional model, update your business model, and give yourself your freedoms back.
That's absolutely right. And you know, when you were talking, there was a quote running through my head that I brought into a book that I'm working on. It's a quote by Humphrey Davy, who was a scientist around the 1800s, And what he said was, I've learned more from my failures than from my successes.
Yes.
And yes. That is absolutely true.
Yes. There's also one here that I just, I don't want to quote it the wrong way here. I'm not gonna find it now. It's I'm gonna Thomas. There we go. Thomas Paine. Do you know the quote by Thomas Paine?
Mm-mm. No.
Thomas Paine. So here's the quote. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it the superficial appearance of being right.
Hmm.
Let's just say that one more time.
Yeah.
A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it the superficial appearance of being right.
Yeah.
And raises at first a formidable cry in defense of custom.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Sounds like the accountant's moving from the traditional to the new model, right? But here's the best part, and this is the last quote from Thomas Paine's 1776 essay, Common Sense. It says, the last sentence is this, it goes, but the tumult soon subsides. Time makes more converts than reason.
Yeah.
So over time, you see more and more firms are moving to a value-based model. They're moving away from the billable hour. Most firms are doing that. So over time, we're starting to see more firms going to the value pricing system. The part that I believe is a missing link on that, if you really want to exponentially increase the freedoms, is by getting away from compliance driven and moving to the reliance side. That's the second mm-hmm. part of the switch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think you are onto something, you know, and you're not the only person I work with who has said the same thing. Maybe not using the same words, but it's, we've got to move away from compliance.
Yeah. These are the two, my mentors and that I am eternally grateful for is Paul Dunn and mm-hmm. Ron Baker. Those two changed my life when I had my accounting practice and I read The Firm of the Future. They literally changed my life. I read The Firm of the Future and I changed my practice right over. And when I told them both that I had done that the first time I met them, they went, you did what? You actually changed you did it by yourself? And I went, well, yeah. And they said, it's unusual, very unusual. And so that was another reason for me going, well, if it's very unusual for someone to actually take that action and make it happen, then let's create a program to help them do that. That's why I'm not the hero in the story. It's the accounting firms are the heroes. They're the hero. I'm merely the guide. I just show them the path to move the model because I've done it myself. Right. I've done the path myself. I've got, you know, doing it myself by myself was probably the most painful thing I ever did. I'm glad I did it, but I don't want anybody else to go through that pain. That's why I have that's why I do the executive coaching model.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like something that all of the firm owners that I worked for could have used. You know, I had many, many conversations with them about how they should leverage their experiences to provide higher value services and to really help their clients with the things that they wanted. But they all just kind of nodded and, yeah, that sounds great. And I'll get to that when I have some time.
Yeah.
Now, client accounting services is a really big thing these days. What do you think will be the next big thing for accountants once you use your crystal ball and peer into the future?
You're going to have to enlighten me here. What do you mean by that phrase, accounting
services? Client accounting services, client advisory services. This is this is something that is big in the US right now, where you're not just providing bookkeeping, but you're providing a next level up from bookkeeping.
Okay, so you're talking about advisory.
Advisory.
Well, which is what we've been talking about the whole time, moving away from compliance-driven transactions to reliance-based advising.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, do you think there's anything beyond that?
Well,
or doing it at a higher level.
I could extrapolate in a whole bunch of different areas. Okay.
Okay.
The only thing that, see, the thing is, what we're going to is moving away from what we're doing mm-hmm. to why we're doing it. It's from a what to a why. So if you think about it, accountants that are just cranking out tax returns are doing the what. Bang, 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 bang. Soon as you turn and you have the conversation with the client and figure out why they want, what's the transformation they're looking for, the why.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can focus on that. And that's everything.
Yeah.
Okay. There's nothing beyond the why. Why do we do anything? That's the purpose. That's, shall we call it like the wonderful book, Man's Search for Meaning, right? What are we doing? Why are we doing it? There's nothing beyond that. Once you know the why of what you're trying to do, and you can articulate and have the conversation, but it's about understanding the why. Where, why are they doing it? What are they trying to accomplish? Now, how we get there, there's a whole bunch of stuff that can happen. I mean, AI, artificial intelligence, IBM Watson can start analyzing and figuring out a whole bunch of extra stuff in there. So there's going to be a whole bunch of artificial intelligence that's going to help get to that why and maybe even deliver on that why. But there's nothing beyond the why, because that's the why. That's the why we're here. That's what we're doing. How can we go beyond that? That's
You're
a very
right.
deep question.
That is a deep question.
But that's it. The why.
That is indeed why some of us became accountants.
Why does anybody do anything? What are we actually trying to build? It's the difference between being consciously aware and intentional. So it's about intentionally building the life you want for yourself, as opposed to just letting it happen. Right? Accountants start an accounting practice and it just accidentally turns into a business instead of actually intentionally building a business. And so for the first 18 years of my life, I was an accidental entrepreneur because I just started in an accounting practice that already had a partnership. I bought into partnership. I just did what they did the previous years and didn't do any innovation, no changes. Then the second 8 years of my career, I actually created intentionally a business model that worked for me. For those last 8 years, my staff never worked a single hour of overtime. I made more profit than I did in those last 8 years than I ever made in the first 18.
Wow.
Okay. I was intentional on how I was building my life. So it's all about the intentionality. That was my why. That's it. Once you know your why and you intentionally build towards it, there's nothing beyond the why, except a new why once you get there.
That is, I think, a perfect note to end our conversation on, Eric. I want to thank you so much for your time. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best place to find you?
I normally say the best place to find me is ericsolbakkencpa.com, but trying to spell Eric Solbakken is a difficult task. So if they want to remember, one quick one is accountantsuccessformula.com. The accountantsuccessformula.com, punch that in, hit the button, you'll find me.
Okay. All right. Well, it has been so fantastic talking to you, Eric, and benefiting from your intellectual capital. Thank you so much.
That was a lot of fun, Liz. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of cpatrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to cpatrendlines.com.